Welcome to the Business Resilience Decoded podcast, brought to you by Aspalis Advisors and the Disaster Recovery Journal. Crisis management in today's world is ever-changing, and this podcast is our commitment to help you navigate successful outcomes for any crisis you may face. I'm your host, Vanessa Matthews. I specialize in providing insights and solutions for crisis, continuity, and resilience across industries from real estate and healthcare to terrorism in the airline and transportation worlds. No matter what industry you're in, this podcast will provide you the tools to build resilience in your organization. Welcome back to another episode of the Business Resilience Decoded podcast. I'm so excited. This is going to be one of our first episodes in the year of 2024, such an interesting year. Today's episode title is The Culture Shifts That Will Increase Employee Retention and Profitability. Our guest is Ron Harvey. He is the Vice President and Chief Operating Officer for Global Core Strategies and Consulting. A little bit of background on Ron before I bring him to the microphone. He's a friend, he is a coach, he is a confidant, and he is one of the most trusted people that I have known in my professional career, especially as a business owner. Ron and his team work with leaders to develop strong cultures within their organizations to build diversity and to help retain top talent. And what I love about his tagline in his business is people always matter. Ron Harvey, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Vanessa. It is an honor and no pressure being that it's the first of the year. So thank you for having me.
So I'm so excited about today's episode, and I'm really interested in what you think about all the things that we're going to talk about. So if it's okay, we're going to dive in. We talk about core values a lot on the podcast. So just to kick us off, what do you see that Global Core Strategy values? Or what are your recommendations on how companies can value core values as it relates to their leadership?
Yeah, I mean, thanks for the question, first of all, and the work that you're doing. If you even think of when we formed our company, a part of the question is actually baked in, the answer to the question, the word core. You know, so our company, that was really intentional. We wanted to do something that was going to hit the core of an organization, which we believe is the people. And which leads us to the core values of what do we really stand for? Not what we do, not what we write on a wall or what we put in some fancy title or some book, you know, or on a website, quite honestly. It's how do we really function? Where are the deal breakers for us? You know, when it comes to hiring, when it comes to letting people go because, you know, they don't fit that model or that bill. Or when it comes to even the work that we do with our clients or the things that we sponsor or don't sponsor or participate in or don't participate in. There are some things that we fundamentally stand for that help us. It's like our compass to how we're going to operate, how we're going to live, how we're going to do business, which is important to us. And I think, you know, I have a military background, you know, the compass, which has turned into a GPS today, still guides and navigate where people are. I mean, people live by GPS. So our core values, it's really in layman's terms for those that are listening, it's our GPS. At the end of the day, how do we get from point A to point B within our organization every day?
And I love what you said about it's the fundamental thing that helps you understand how are you basically going to treat people and what are you going to stand for in an organization. And what I have seen is I didn't really understand or appreciate core values until I became a business owner. Yes. And then now I'm like, it's everything. I don't know how you do anything. And now I am first time saying this on the podcast for all of our subscribers. We are with child. So I'll be having a baby soon. And now I'm sitting here thinking like, what are the core values for my children? How are we going to set this up and communicate this?
Yes. Kids will make you find out real quick what you're going to stand for. You know, you don't have them, you don't get it. But when you do have them, you begin to realize like, what are you going to watch on TV? What music are you really going to listen to? Where are you really going to go at? You know, what kind of beverages do you have in front of them? Do you smoke or not smoke? Do you text and drive or not text and drive? Do you speed or wear a seatbelt? It really begins to modify your children will help you define who you really are and how you really want to be. Yeah. Or you can be a hypocrite and tell them to don't do as I do as I say.
Yep. So I met you maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and one of the things I've learned about you and specifically your business is the executive coaching component. Another thing that I knew nothing about when I was in corporate America
as an individual contributor. And as a business owner, it is now a key part of our business that is critical. And so as I think about that, I'm wondering, what do you see as some of the most important skills with all the leaders that you work with that need to be developed to be the leader of 2024 and beyond?
Yeah, I'll tell you the thing that shows up, and not necessarily even what I see, probably a combination of what I see, Vanessa, but also what assessments and surveys and organizational culture assessments are saying. So it's a combination of all of those things and what's happening in our company as well. You know, some of the things that are super important for leaders to be effective is listening, first of all. First and foremost is, can you listen to what people are asking or saying or doing? Do you have the patience to listen? So that's huge. But what shows up more times than not is, are you a competent leader at taking care of people? Because there's a difference in being competent in your job per se, pulling, you know, doing those technical things. But when you get to leadership, it's really, are you a competent person that knows how to take care of people in the most adverse conditions? Because it's easy to take care of people when things are going well. But can you take care of people when your bottom line doesn't look like it needs to look, or your supply chain is all disruptive, or everybody's coming out with COVID, or you're trying to balance work and life and kids and sickness? And so people want to know, are you competent and trustworthy to take care of me? So I will tell you that what I've learned over time, that what people enjoy working with us is they can trust me and I'm competent in taking care of people. Not always comfortable and convenient, but I'm competent in making the right choices and the right decisions. I think the other thing that people ask, you know, when it comes to leaders that we got to be able to do is they ask a couple questions of us. First, do you care about me? Can I trust you? And will you help me? People want to be successful, and they don't want to be successful at the expense of the company, and they don't want the company to be successful and they're not successful. So it's a win-win for everybody. So people are really coming in and they don't want to see the CEO, you know, making this big check, you know, going home and then they're barely making ends meet. That's not necessarily taking care of people. That's not a competent leader. So I will tell you, leaders, please listen to your team. Ask a lot of questions. Be present, be trustworthy, and be competent.
So one of the things that we've observed is some organizations have shared that they have frustration because talent is not motivated. And when they do show up, they don't want to perform well in their role. And I'm wondering if this listening and competency from an executive leadership perspective, do you think that that's playing a role, or is there something else at stake here for what's driving what some organizations are seeing in the marketplace?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all the things that you mentioned, Vanessa. But here's what I've always challenged organizations or people when they say people are not motivated. I've always pushed back on that, quite honestly. Because I think people are motivated. They're either motivated to follow or motivated not to follow. But people are motivated. I mean, it's just a matter of what are they motivated about. And I think that's our role as leaders, is to figure out what are they motivated about. So, you know, my wife and I, we have three kids, and there are times when our 16-year-old has to get up early, and it's because we need her to get up and got to get her to school at the time, blah, blah, blah. And we literally have these systems in place to help her get up. But when that little 16-year-old got to go get her hair done, she don't need an alarm clock. She don't need any assistance. Like, she'll be sitting at the car waiting for us. So it's not so it's motivational ability. I don't really think that it's motivation. I think, yeah, it's people are motivated. Am I the leader that they want to be motivated for to do the things that need to get done? So it goes back to us again, is how do we show up? You know, I'm a veteran. I've been to combat twice, and I'll tell you, people were motivated to serve on my team. Going into the same combat zone where another leader, they weren't motivated. Same thing, same organization, just different teams. So I will tell you that leaders play a vital role in how people show up motivated. Because people say, well, the workforce is just not motivated. It depends how they feel about you. At the end of the day, think of married couples. Some husbands are motivated to come home and some husbands are motivated to stay at work, depending on what's happening at home. So I think we play a vital part in creating the environment where people can show up totally motivated and lean all the way in. Because if you can tap into that, people will always be motivated.
You know, I think back to the leaders that I did work with in corporate, and there were some of them where I would probably do anything, like jump out of a window for them, because yes, they were just great people. And I just loved being around them. And then there were the the folks that led my department that I just was like, I can't wait to leave.
Yes, I'm motivated. I'm motivated to go find another job. I'm motivated immediately to show up late.
I'm motivated to go start a business.
Yes. So you may get to thank that leader at some point, say, because of you, I am who I am today. So you motivated me. So people are truly motivated to either come closer or get further away, but people are truly motivated.
So I'm looking at from a people perspective, right? You've got hiring, you've got 4 years ago, George Floyd was murdered. DE&I was the best thing going. It was great to be Black. And now it's like, I don't want to be Black. Corporate America is like, diversity is irrelevant. It doesn't matter. We have another election year. You've got changes in technology and generative AI. It's just that's all you hear about is AI, you know. Then you have everything else happening from a geopolitical perspective, wars, and how this country, specifically from a U.S. perspective, is showing up globally in different places, right, wrong, or indifferent. So question for you is, what are some of the trends that are coming up in your world, and how are you helping your clients to navigate this complexity?
Yeah, it is a very, very tough time across the entire globe. So whether it's in corporate America, whether it's political landscape, whether it's in our school systems or our communities or our churches, you name it, it runs a gamut where people are challenged to what they really stand for. I'll go back to core values. People are challenged where at a time when we need it the most, we need leaders to stand up more. And be more, here's what we stand for, here's what we don't stand for, here's what we're going to support. You know, so serving 21 years in the military, I voted on both sides of it, Republican or Democrat. You know, I was lucky enough that Barack Obama ran for president. I got the chance in my lifetime to vote for a Black president. But all the rest of my voting has been for a white president. So I finally get a chance to say, at the end of the day, what do I stand for? And most people, honestly, when I made my vote, they thought I just voted for President Obama because he was Black. No, I was super excited and I was happy. And yeah, I was eager to cast that vote. And him being Black played a role in it, but it wasn't the only thing I saw in him. But no one ever questioned when I voted for all the other presidents I voted for and served for that were not my complexion or were not Black. And they never questioned, did I vote for them because they were white or because they was a male? So they gave me some options and some choices. So I think as a country, we got to go back to, have we lost our way? And I am concerned about that. I'm concerned that our kids are seeing, I wonder what they're going to write about us in 30 years. What are they going to write about our generation? You know, MLK, you know, day is coming up. And we can still say that he was always a very strong leader. He stood up for what he believed in. He advocated and he wanted right and justice. What are they going to say about us? What are they going to say about us with the way that we've allowed our country to go through an insurrection? And some people say right, wrong, and different, that those people are patriotic or were those people insurrectionists? So I'm questioning, I am concerned for my 16-year-old that we've lost our way as a country. Our behaviors and what we say don't match what we do. And what we stand for as the United States of America has drastically changed from the time I fought for that flag.
Yeah. So I'm going to stay right here for a second. You work with organizations that might be experiencing culture challenges, diversity and equity issues, and just challenges from a leadership perspective for them to be able to work together productively and effectively. When you get into a conversation in a room of leaders and the question of DE&I is on the table, where you got somebody who's polar, DEI is stupid, this is dumb, it's too much effort, and you've got somebody who may be like a Vanessa Matthews that's like, you crazy, what are you talking about? What's a message or something that you've been able to use in the past that helps the room to see each perspective, whether you agree with it or not?
Yes. Phenomenal question. First is I stay very neutral and I don't put my personal biases and opinions in there. And everyone that's listening has a bias. You have something you prefer to have. Totally get it. And I do too. But at that moment, what I have to do as a professional is detach from those things that may make me get in the way of what we're trying to get done. And so when I'm in those rooms and they're polar opposites and there are people that do want to do it and get it done. And those are all races. And there are people that think it's a waste of time. for a variety of reasons. And that's also, it's not just white people that think it's a waste of time. There are some African-Americans that are tired of talking about it and think it's a waste of time too. So I don't want people to think this is just a black against white thing. No, there are people on both sides of this that are having some hard conversations. My job in that particular moment is to focus on what is it that we're trying to get accomplished for the people that we serve. And the reason I say that, leadership is all about service. And service is all about sacrifice. And so when I think about what it is that we're trying to get done, and not necessarily our that's my agenda, if I'm in a leadership role, what do my people need from me? Not just my white people, not just my black people, not just my straight people, not just my gay people, not just my Hispanic people, not just my people with degrees or people with titles. What do my people need from me as a leader at that moment? And how do I provide that? Not agree with it, because I think sometimes we get caught up and I have to agree to support. There are a lot of things that I took a oath of office when I served in the military that I absolutely did not agree with, but I agreed that I took an oath. And it was to defend, to support, to respect, and follow through on those things. And I think we get caught up in when it's convenient, we do it. When it's not convenient or it's not our favorite, then we fight it. And I don't think that's fair to what we say we signed up for or agreed to. And so I think for me, when I'm in those rooms, I say, what did we sign up for? What is it? And then that's to lead and take care of people. Then what does that mean without you thinking about what it is that you want? So when I'm in those rooms, I will tell you, it's the hardest work to do. And I've been doing this DE&I work for probably about 26 years. It's never been easy. It's never, ever been easy. It's always been a tug of war, an uphill challenge or conversation, if you will. But here's what I do. I never get angry, regardless of what's said in those rooms, but I always stay engaged. Mm-hmm. So I let my frustration and my irritation and my disappointment turn into engagement.
Yeah.
I will never disconnect. So I tell you, in those rooms, I would ask everybody that's doing it, even when you're angry, stay engaged. Unless you can't control your emotions and you're going to say something that's unprofessional or disrespectful or discriminatory, then disengage briefly, get yourself together and come back into the conversation. But don't stay away from the conversation, because it's not going to go anywhere. I think we're going to have this conversation, unfortunately, in America, probably the rest of my life.
Oh, for sure. So to that point, there's culture shifts happening in every organization, whether it's generational talent, whether it's a culture shift of does DE&I have a place here? Where will it fit? Whether it's what social causes do we support versus another one? Can you talk through how you may have helped a client walk through a culture shift that had a positive impact on reputation and profitability? And I say those two words because, one, you can measure them, but two, when we talk about people and DE&I and talent and all the things, everybody always wants a business case.
Yes.
Right? And I remember the first time I started working with you, you said, what's your goal? And I gave you a number and you said, well, that goal ain't big enough for me. And so if you don't hit this number over here, I'm not going to be your coach. And I said, well, dang, man, shit, it was my goal. So how have you seen culture shifts have an impact on retention and profitability?
Yeah, I think culture at the end of the day, it drives everything in your organization, quite honestly, because culture is the way we behave at the end of the day. And so I really have walked organizations through and said, how you behave is going to impact your bottom line. It's non-negotiable. You know, so when you're talking about your bottom line, and most people will pay attention to the top line, but here's what I have learned in our country. People care about their profit margins. And if I really want the attention of an organization, well, if I'm working with a client, and you can call it United Way, or you can call it an airport, or you can call it a school district, or you can call it a federal government, everybody cares about the bottom line. And my role and my job at that moment is say, well, tell me how what you're currently doing is feeding that or destroying that. People can measure that reality. So when you think about major organizations that have disappeared because they just didn't have a good environment that people want to work for, well, then all of a sudden the retention rates are horrible. So which means people are walking out the door. And the minute they walk out the door, you have nobody to serve the people, your phenomenal product or your service. And when you look at it across the board, people that treat people like people and look after them and take care of them at the end of the day don't have a problem talking about profit margin. Look at the best football team. How is it that you can have a phenomenal head coach and have a losing season? Or a phenomenal talent on the team with the head coach and still have a losing season? It's because people will play according to how you motivate them. And people are motivated based on the culture that they're living in. Mm. Otherwise, they'll do what I call working for your money, not for your vision. And there are a lot of people in our organization sometimes that will work for your money because they got to keep the lights on. They got to feed their kids. They got to pay their car payment. But they couldn't even, most of them are not there for your vision and where you're trying to go. And so it creates a very hostile culture, or not a very healthy culture, that people are giving you the best they have. They're giving you enough to survive and stand out of trouble, not to get fired.
Yep. So I'm going to go to a hostile question, and then I'm going to go back to actionable steps. So, and we're going to double click a little bit more on this topic of DE&I. Yes. We've seen a lot of challenges around DE&I, of course. We talked about this. But more recently, we've seen some things at the Supreme Court level and the resignation of Dr. Claudine Gay at Harvard.
Yes.
So what is it that you think leaders need to observe, to notice, to learn, to take away from what we saw play out at Harvard as we look into 2024?
Yeah, I think it, which is a dynamic question. I've had this question with two teenagers in my house about a week ago in their perspective and what they see and what they know and how much they know. So I try to get them to read it for themselves and then have a healthy conversation that I didn't have when I was at 15 and 16 years old. But that's a dynamic conversation for us in our country, where you have someone that's very qualified. Let's just be real. She was qualified. If you go back and pull her record, they had endorsed everything she had ever done. I mean, she was their best scholar. She was the best dean. I mean, she had competed. And was she qualified? Absolutely. Overqualified, good at what she had done. What had happened for her at that time is, when you look at, you know, some of the statements, when you're in that role, in a leadership role, I think for us, she did not across the board answer questions the way, when you're in that space, if you're speaking for Harvard, you got to speak for the organization. And I think some of that blended over for her in personal. So every leader, when you're in a professional role, you must be able to separate the difference between your personal feelings and your professional organization and what you're speaking for and what hat you're wearing. So when she didn't speak up for how Jews were being treated or said it depends, I think what I've learned in this space is, you got to be very, very mindful, not careful, because I don't want to walk on the eggshells, but you got to know your audience and you got to understand, where is the question coming from? So I think for her, that question wasn't answered in a way that satisfied the majority of the organization. And I would say, even for you and I in organizations, how we talk about what we're speaking of versus our personal opinion is super important. And as a country, we become very, very driven by spin doctors, if you will. We will turn the conversation into what we want to do, what we want to do to people. It's always been around. There are a lot of people that are wrongly convicted because someone tampered with evidence, like literally. So was she a victim of circumstance? Absolutely. It's what they wanted to get done, and they had to figure out a way to get it done. And so, unfortunately, very qualified, very reputable. When it comes to them saying plagiarism for her, if it's accurate, then it goes against her character. But that same document was put in front of their board before she ever got the job. She's been around for years. It's not like it was new. So I think it was just the more, honestly, it was that we're in a hard place in America where if you speak your truth, even though people say show up, if you speak your truth, it can be dangerous.
Well, it depends on what office you're running for.
What office you're in, yes. Because we know, depending on where you are, we see stuff all over. And I say that. And here's what I said to the young ladies in the house that I was talking to about this. It's amazing for this professional. Even, let's just say it was plagiarism. Let's just say outright, let's just go on that side of it. Let's say she did plagiarize. Are we saying that a president of a university has to be perfect? Can't have any flaws. But every other position in our country can. Because that's the expectation we just set, that this president, if you go back and you pull everybody's record and say that nobody ever cited a document correctly in their paper, I would say they're being dishonest.
Yep.
I don't care who it is, me, you, and everybody that's listening. If you can go back and honestly, and they pull every document, or every paper you've ever written in college and say you didn't improperly cite something, I would say you're being dishonest. I could be wrong. But I think those things do happen, and you learn to cite better, you got more technology. But to say that it was plagiarism versus it was something miscited, but it's enough to really destroy someone's career or to pull them out, does she have to really be perfect to serve as a president of a university? Let me be really specific. President of a university. Because I've watched in every other level of our country, you don't have to be perfect to serve.
Yeah. That's the question for 2024, right?
Yes. Yeah, and we're gonna see it come. We're gonna see it come to fruition. You know, but every leader in our country don't have a perfect record. I mean, I'm running the business, but I don't have a perfect record.
Yeah, I'd have found out the game plenty of times.
Yes.
Might find out today. So last question for you. This podcast has a significant following of resilience, risk, emergency management, security professionals, whether you're entry level, mid management, or in a senior level capacity. And so when we think about actionable steps for our listeners that can positively impact culture over the next 30 days, what would you recommend to our industry?
Yeah, I would say, because you're a risk assessment organization and you think about, you know, really impacting culture at the end of the day, the very first thing I will tell you for me, when I walk in and I'm working with clients and I'm talking about like, what are the, know your team really, really well. Leadership culture is about people. You know, our tagline is really, really intentional. People always matter. And if that's what you're going to live up to, then make sure that your team understands what your expectations are consistently, what they can expect from you consistently, how they see you going forward consistently, what are the deal breakers consistently, and that you're going to be one that is an honest broker, but ownership, like ownership at every single level in the organization. You know, so I don't want people in our organization, Vanessa, to wait for me to tell them what to do next or not make a decision because they're concerned on how I'm going to respond to it. If they really have our best interests at heart, I want them to make the decision and not look over their shoulders worrying about how I am. So I don't want to create a hostile environment or a fear-based environment. So if you're really going to talk about creating a winning culture, the first thing I'm going to tell everybody to do is start with you and say, what does that require of you? Because it's going to require something different. In order to create the environment that you want to create, it's going to really require something different. And so your steps, first of all, ask your team what they need from you. Listen really carefully. Take great notes. Go find you a good coach to help you figure out how to do it, because you're going to have some hard work to do, to be quite honest, if you listen honestly. And most executives I coach, most of them say, I thought this was about my team. It's never about your team. It's about how you show up so your team can show up. So if you're listening and you're in an executive position, most of the work, if you want your team to show up in a manner that, look at the South Carolina basketball team. I'm sure Dawn Staley is hard on them, but she's creating an environment that people want to play for her. Well, who was the coach before she came?
Can't even remember.
Don't have a clue. So the reality of it is, it really, everything honestly is based on the leader. So if you're going to create a winning culture, here's the first thing I'm going to say. Make sure you show up as a winning coach then. Make sure you show up as a winning leader. Because if you got a winning team and you're not a winning leader, it won't be long before you're not in position. Mm. They don't go hand in hand.
Yeah. So you launched a podcast and you have another book coming out. Can you give us the deets?
Are you trying to get me in trouble, right, Vanessa? Yes, I do have a podcast, which I actually, and our podcast is called Unpack with Ron Harvey. And it's conversations that people can't have in boardrooms. It's conversations that people won't have openly. And so I really dive into really difficult questions. So I talk about the Harvard. I talk about DE&I. I talk about the George Floyd. I talk about us appreciating everybody in our workforce, every single individual. And to the point where we can say in the workplace, you can have someone of a different sexual orientation, and I didn't ask you to come judge them based on your religion. I don't care about your religion. I'm talking about me and my sexual orientation, and can you appreciate me and not throw your Bible at me? Because when I'm in your workplace, I want to be who I am and you be who you are. And so we're having those real conversations, and leaders are coming on, and I don't even give them the questions in advance. I say, hey, I don't know what I'm going to ask you, but I can tell you we're going to have 30 minutes of conversation, so just hang on for the ride. And you'd be amazed, literally, how many people are signing up because they have a story. They want to share it. They want to talk about it. So that's it. But the other book that I'm currently working on, and this is not out for out at all, quite honestly. I think Linda knows, which is my wife, and there are a couple of people that are working with it. But I figured out something. when you think about the person that has most impact on us in our lives, there's something that they did or something they brought to the table that had that impact on us. And it has never been their degree, and it's never been how smart they were. So I'm writing this book around the people that have really invested the most into us. What was it that we appreciated about them the most? And what I'm figuring out, it's not IQ, and it's not technical skills. They're bringing a lot more to the table that's having the greatest impact on us. So the title of the book is Impact Leadership. How do you show up without having the highest degree or having the highest degree, not having the best skill set or having the best skill set, but change people's lives forever? I'm an executive coach. You'd be amazed how many people think it's just going to be about their job and then realize, man, I've become a better wife. I've become a better husband. I've become a better father. I've become a better person in my church and in my community, or better whatever. Here's what I would challenge everybody that's listening. You can never be a better anything until you're a better human being. It starts with the person that's sitting in the seat. You must be a good, otherwise you're just an irate, disrespectful, disobedient person, whether it's the leader, the president, running the country. You're still that person. So please become a better human being first.
Well, let the church say amen. Okay. So on that note, where can people go to learn more and connect with you?
Yeah, probably the easiest way. I do a lot on LinkedIn. And for those that are on Facebook, we do have a Facebook account. I don't manage it. Let me be real transparent. People keep me up to date on it because it's just not the platform that I gravitate towards. But people follow it, so I use it. But if you want to follow me, go to LinkedIn. You'll see me. I post stuff. I put just about everything that I'm doing out on LinkedIn. Or you can go to our website, which is www.gcs.consulting. You can follow us. You can check us out. If you see something that's useful or helpful, you don't have to worry about it. Go ahead and pull it and use it. If it makes you better, great. If it makes you smarter, phenomenal. And if it helps you make you money, go for it. I've gotten to a place where I don't have time to worry about, you know, if people are using what I have. I actually created for them to use. I want people to take anything I can give them that makes them better and make the world around them better. I want them to use it. So please follow me. I'm supportive of what you do. And if you ever need our services, I'd love for you to call us as well.
Thank you for joining the podcast, Ron Harvey.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Hopefully everybody enjoys this and it gives you more traction and people that are following you.
Absolutely. And until next time, we'll see you later.
Thank you for listening to the Business Resilience Decoded podcast, brought to you by Asphalus Advisors and Disaster Recovery Journal. Make sure you check out the show notes for this episode to see all the upcoming events, programs, and ways we can support you. Make sure you subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, leave us a review, and share it with a friend. Thanks again, and I'll talk to you in the next episode.